The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
The podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. And if this is the first time you're joining us, thank you and welcome. Hope you enjoy today's show. And, you know, if you're a regular listener or if you were in the past, then it's great to have you back again. Before I jump into today's episode, I should probably mention that I'm not alone. I'm joined by David Kelly, our marketing guy here at Noosey. How you doing, David?
Hey, Nathan, I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're hoping that this is going to be some kind of permanent ongoing thing, right? Part of my problem in the past was, you know, having to schedule guests to come on or being the only person here in front of the microphone for me was always a little bit daunting, shall we say. We're hoping to shake things up maybe a little bit, getting David in on the podcast. And so today's going to be the first episode. David's a little bit nervous.
Yeah, but it's interesting because what's easy about this is since we just have the team Slack channel, you can just ping me on Slack and we can do podcasts at any time. You don't have to hunt too far for me or try to court me in any way. So that's the easy part.
Exactly. So, all right then. So not everyone will know who you are. For those who don't, can you give us sort of a brief, you know, outline of who David Kelly is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined the Noosey team, I think it was about 4 months now. And what my job here is to help us grow and really to help us grow as rapidly as possible while still trying to maintain the effectiveness and the care of building a long-term brand. So at the same time, I just love marketing across the board. When I'm not marketing, I'm surfing. So if you don't see me marketing, I'm probably surfing. And if you don't see me surfing, I'm probably marketing.
All right. Well, that's great, David. So what we're going to try and do through the Creative Business Podcast is we're going to take a subject, take a topic. We get a lot of feedback from our customers, you know, areas and subjects that they're perhaps struggling with or maybe are looking for ways to streamline a certain workflow, a certain situation. And one of the areas that we've heard back a lot about were, you know, sort of creating consistent leads, right, David?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic because back in March of 2017, we actually sent a survey to some of our most loyal customers asking them what their biggest problem in their business was. And across the board, 2x more than any other issue, the most common complaint we heard was, I have difficulty generating leads. So in some ways that came across as someone just saying consistent leads, period. Other ways they said not enough prospects. And then in a third way,
this is both freelancers and sort of agencies and studios, right?
Yeah, it seems to affect everyone across the board. Whether you're large or small, it's either a quality issue generating leads or it's just a raw number issue. So you're either having difficulty finding the leads you want or you're having difficulty just getting leads, period.
I can completely relate to that, you know, sort of over 10 years freelancing before Noosey came along and the whole sort of feast and famine thing. I think regardless of the size of your business, whether you're just a freelance consultant, I've always been just a freelance consultant, whether you are a studio or perhaps even an international agency, obviously getting those leads coming in through the door to make sure that you do, you know, have a continuing business, I think is probably one of the hardest things to do. And is one of the scariest things as well, because if you do get to that point where a project is finished and you don't have something lined up for the very next month, the next week, the next day, then things can get pretty scary pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. And gosh, I remember you just reminded me of some of my early freelancing experiences. And I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, just trying to find leads however I could. And I would reach out on Kickstarter. I would cold email people. And I actually got banned on Kickstarter because I was trying to cold contact people and ask for work on Kickstarter. Yeah. But however I did it, it just never seemed to work. And this took about 4 or 5 years for me to finally crack the code for generating consistent quality leads. So really excited to kind of dive into what we learned and the common pitfalls along the way.
So you cracked the code. You'd be able to sell that for millions, yeah. I think.
I cracked my own code, I think, okay. Not necessarily fantastic, but it's okay. So hopefully I can share some of those insights and help our listeners along the way generate their own leads and, most importantly, generate their own quality leads.
Fantastic. And I know for a fact that obviously when we started looking for someone to help us with marketing at Nusi, we received a huge number, in fact, far more emails and sort of outreach, should we say, strategies by, you know, people from all around the world. And obviously David was one of the ones that stood out to us. And that began straight from, I mean, it wasn't essentially a cold email, but we'd never heard of David before, obviously. This was the first time he was emailing us. And straight away, something within the sort of the email, the contact point that David sent along to us stood out head and shoulders above the rest. I mean, so that's probably a good place to start, right, with cold emailing?
Yeah. And
everyone's least favorite activity.
Right. And those words are so kind. I really appreciate that. And I think cold emailing is a really interesting topic because it gets a really bad rap, and it seems like most people are very averse to doing cold emailing. But what I've noticed is actually there's so much mediocrity in cold email that if you even just do 1 to 2% better, you're going to stand head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd. And a second pillar to that too is everyone has email, so it's a really easy way to get in contact with people if you do it right.
Completely. And again, referring back to when we were looking for the help with the marketing, I would say that after receiving the first couple of hundred emails, it became very easy to just switch off when you were reading the same email over and over and over again. It was almost like a spam filter. You know, once it sees the same content a certain number of times, it just says, no, this isn't worth even reading. I'm not going to bother your sort of inbox with it. So I think there is a very, I wouldn't say easy way to stand out, because obviously a lot of people do struggle with this, but there certainly are ways that you can stand out in someone's inbox, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I'm curious, before I dive into kind of how I saw it from my side, when you saw all these emails from all the potential marketing people, and I was lucky enough to be called to bat, what did you notice about those cold emails?
A lot of people did their absolute best to fill their email with their accomplishments and things about sort of them and sort of a huge list of qualifications and technical skills and companies they'd helped in the past. And that was just an immediate turn off because, you know, I want you to talk about me. I want you to tell me how you're going to help me. For starters, you know, I'm not going to read a huge long email. I'm just not, because I'm going through a lot of email on a daily basis. There were just a huge amount of emails that just weren't personable in any way, shape or form. You could tell it was a standard template they had that just went out to any job offer that was under the sun. And in some cases, and I'm sure, you know, people who spend enough time around email will have seen this as well, that when you do actually use a template or some text maybe that you have saved in a Word document, when you copy and paste it into an email app, whatever, I just can't think of the word now, sort of like Thunderbird or whatever the system is you might use. If you copy and paste that in and then change out the name, like Dear Sir or Dear Nathan or whatever, the font actually changes slightly. The unfortunate thing is you don't see it on your end. It's only the person who receives it. So when somebody is using a standard template and they don't remove the formatting from it, when they paste it in, it stands out a mile, and it's really, as soon as I see that, I just close the email straight away. So it's just, you know, 100% template just with my name swapped out. There were so many things, and yeah, it just became like looking at a mass of the same email written by the same person, just signed with a different name. And I think in your case, when it came through, it was short, it was concise. The tone of it was just incredibly personable. Like I said, you know, it was very friendly. It's almost like, you know, I understand you're probably receiving an absolute ton of emails, so I'm going to respect your time. And then there was also the interesting thing you did here, and I'm sure this is probably going to help as well. As we talk a little further, talk a little more, was that you just put a link to a quick introduction video.
Yeah, and I think this is a perfect segue into some of the things that go really wrong with emails. And taking a step back with cold emailing, I think you nailed the pin on the head, or whatever that saying is, that most people get a lot of emails, which are basically the same. the point you brought up about how can I make it about them, about the people I'm emailing, is really, really important. And I think that's the biggest pitfall and the number one pitfall that most people, most freelancers, most agencies fall into. So essentially what happens is most freelancers or agencies will say, here are my qualifications, exactly like happened to Nathan when he was interviewing, 100 plus people for the Nusi marketing role. And they say things like, this is my background, this is what I've done. But really, that's mostly irrelevant. And I think there is like a threshold of here's what I've done, especially if you have big name past clients that you can kind of name drop. But for the most part, someone like Nathan, or if I were hiring someone like myself, would want to know, what can you do for me and my business? How can you help me in my business? So I think that's the biggest mistake. And then a second mistake I think you hit on perfectly is it becomes like a blinding situation when you receive tons and tons of emails. And I've done some hiring in the past too, and I remember just seeing applications come in and they all look the same. They're all formatted the same. There are misspellings. Like, I know Nathan experienced people misspelling Nusi, which for the record is spelled N-U-S-I-I.
the amount of applicants that misspelled the company's name was unbelievable. Yeah, that was a pretty big turnoff.
And to me, that's just a bare minimum of things people should know, how to spell properly and grammatically format it. But the other big part is understanding that you need to separate your email content-wise as well as context-wise. So what that means is looking at a way to make it easy to digest and more personable. So Nathan alluded to the fact that I tried very hard to make my email seem more casual, more personal, and appeal directly to how I could help Nusi grow, not necessarily what I've done in the past. And one of the ways I really tried to separate myself is use a quick video. And there are a lot of tools out there. My favorite is called useloom.com. I think it's a really easy tool. But the video, the mentality I had was, they're getting tons of applications. I really believed in Nusi. I really wanted the position. I wanted to help the team, and I got excited about the opportunity. So I thought, how can I separate myself from the hundreds of cold emails they're getting? And that was using a video.
And I should probably just say as well that that excitement did come through via the video as well, which was a big help for us to see that, you know?
Nice. Yeah, I like that. And when I think about what consultants and freelancers and agencies can do, especially during the RFP process where they're competing, or even if they're just cold emailing someone out of the blue, it's to think about how they can separate their email and how they can appeal directly to the wants of the person they're contacting. So maybe it is using a video. We have a customer of Nusi who's used videos very successfully in his proposals to go from a part-time consultant to a full-time business with an entire team below him. So I think videos do work very well. Or it could just be something like, here's a short one-page document I put together in Google Docs with direct applicable suggestions for your business. And that helps give your client or your project a little insight into how you can help them directly.
I think that here are a couple of ways, or could I make a few suggestions about, you know, how I could help you, you know, straight out of the door without even having spoken to you, shows that interest, shows that you have already put some time into this. I know a lot of freelancers are really reluctant to do this. They almost think like, you know, I don't work for free, and nor do I. I don't know anyone who does. So they sort of tend to come from this place of like, oh, no, well, I can't put any time into a project, you know, before there's sort of money in the bank kind of thing. But I think that, and I'm sure as well, you could probably sort of testify to this as well, that it doesn't actually take any time whatsoever just to perhaps look over a potential client's website or whatever the case may be for the project in hand, and just, you know, take down a couple of notes, a couple of suggestions. You know, you're the expert in your field, whatever that field might be. It wouldn't take you any time at all just to make a couple of notes and ideas and suggestions. And it just shows as well, again, for the person reading that email, as it did to me when we went through this process, was that somebody had actually taken the time and the interest, how shall I say, to help them stand out above the crowd, you know, and immediately they would be moved from the general inbox to the potential, you know, let's talk to this person pile.
And I think that's a fantastic point too about just how to, again, separate the email from the other emails that your prospect or your client is potentially getting. And I don't think it needs to be too intense. As you said, I think a big misconception is people need to spend hours and hours creating this amazing document that's like a full-on project. I really think it's important to set maybe a time limit and say, you know, I'm just going to browse around their website for about an hour, maybe 30 minutes, and just put together a one-page document with what I think are the three best suggestions they can get started with right away. And what's an important nuance of this is it doesn't need to be perfect and it doesn't need to be totally correct. I think what's more important than these are the things they need to do and you need to make sure that they've never done these things before is the fact that you put in the effort beforehand and you did your own research to show the initiative to help the business.
Is there anything else we can actually put in the email or in the content perhaps that can help us stand out from the others?
That's a tough one. And what I would say is it really depends on how you want to separate yourself. And I think it depends on your personality. So Nathan and Michael know me. I'm like kind of an optimistic guy and I like to have fun and be positive. So when I write emails, I make sure that comes across. And I try to separate myself in that way. I think if someone's like a funnier person, they could maybe insert a joke or two or just like use a more casual tone. But as cliche as it sounds, I think the whole being true to yourself is pretty important with emails. If I were to write something ultra, ultra serious, if I were to have sent Nathan an email that's like, "Dear sir or madam,"
I think we had plenty of those.
You're right. I think there would have been a total disconnect between when the email was sent and when Nathan and Michael actually talked to me on Skype, for example. Biggest suggestion I have with trying to separate the email as far as the voice goes is to keep it short and concise and use your own language and to read it out loud after you're done, because a lot of people, when they write, and I think this is partly a schooling thing, they just write like they're writing a paper for a project at school, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really sound like a casual email.
Okay, so we looked a little bit at how perhaps we can stand out once we hit the inbox, but of course, for that to happen, we need to hit the inbox, we need to have the email addresses of who these people were trying to target. So how about we perhaps take a step back and actually look at, you know, how can we begin to find these leads? You know, how are they just magically going to sort of drop on our table? You know, how do we find these email addresses? Where can we begin to look for these leads to keep this constant flux of clients coming through the door?
And I'm curious to hear your answer for this too, Nathan, but I'll give you a quick answer for how I view it. And I think once you have an idea that you want to find a new client, let's say your current project is ending or you're just looking for more clients, one of the tougher parts is actually finding a good email address. And thankfully, this has been solved quite a bit over time with just some great tools. But there are a few ways I like to think about how to cold email someone and how to find their contact information to cold email them. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the easiest ways is just LinkedIn. Now, you can go to LinkedIn, and I think a trick that will probably be fixed at some point but actually works okay for now is just searching for the person's name in an incognito window and then finding the profile for that person incognito. A lot of people on LinkedIn will have direct links to their personal website if you dig a little bit, or their Twitter account, which then links to their personal website. And from there, you can find a direct email address to them. So that's one way. The second way I really like is using a tool called Hunter.io. And that just allows you to input a potential email address for someone and verify if it's correct or not. So it's just an API system you can use and give a shot. And then the third way I think is really useful if you're still struggling is to think about how you can get in contact with this person outside of email to find their email. So let's say you can't find the person through Hunter.io. They don't have any links to their personal websites on LinkedIn, but they do have a link to Twitter. So on Twitter, you could just tweet at them and say, "Hey, want to send you something. What's your best email to reach you?" And I would probably change around the phrasing from that to be more compelling. But the skeleton of it is, how can I get your email address and how can I send you something via email? So how do you look at that, Nathan? How do you look at finding cold email addresses?
Well, I think I was probably a little bit more old school than that when I was cold emailing. I would, you know, after I'd sort of decided on who I was trying to contact, the type of client I was trying to reach out to, what I would generally do is go to their website and I would try and find a – I would always start with the team page or the about page, see if I could find something, just obviously a direct link, and then I wouldn't have to worry about any kind of nasty search or anything. If that failed – which obviously did a lot of the time, I would then jump into Google and I would just try the whole at whatever the company name was, try and use their name. And obviously I'd be guessing here. So if it was John Scallop, then maybe I'd try john@acme.com and see what would come out the other end. And I think, like I said, it's been quite a while since I've done this. I had tried LinkedIn as well in the past, but to be honest, I never had a huge amount of success. But this was a while back now, though, so I'm sure it's changed up a lot as well. But one thing, I like your suggestions a lot. One thing I would say, though, is if you are guessing on multiple emails of the same person, and I've been on the receiving end of this, obviously a lot of people try to reach out to Nusi for one reason or another, and it's usually to offer their services for development. For one reason or another. And in a morning, I'll be hit with four or five emails, all to guest email addresses. And I have a catch-all for the Nusi. So, for example, they might send it to contracting@recruiter@. They might try and guess at my name and I don't know, spell it differently or whatever. And then I see all these emails hit, you know, and that's just a turn off straight away. Cause it's kind of, I guess in that respect, it might be kind of numbers game because they are playing with numbers. Like, well, let's see if we can get through to the right person. And then, you know, that would be great. You know, when you do see five emails coming through from the same person, all going to a slightly different email address, it kind of does come across as a bit spammy. I have to be honest that. So I'd say be very careful with when you're playing that approach.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that also ties into the fact that cold emailing and cold contacting and trying to find clients or prospects just completely cold, doing outreach marketing, can be effective, but in many ways it's not preferred. So this might be a really good point to transition into some of the better ways to find clients that are a little warmer.
Cold emailing, I think, is definitely – It's always at the bottom, I think, of most people's lists in ways to find clients, customers, contacts, whatever that might be. And, you know, I have seen results from it in the past and I've seen, you know, pretty effective results. But again, I think it's something that many people are just not so keen on doing. So what are some other ways we could look at then to try and generate leads?
So I think the next way to think about generating leads, which sounds simple, but most people, again, very similar to cold emailing, do this wrong, is thinking about friends of friends. So when most people hear, oh, you should contact friends of friends, they think, oh, man, I don't have any friends that want someone who needs SEO help or development help or design help or marketing help. And I think that's really just a overly simplified potential doubt that one has. So when I think about friends of friends who might need help, I think a really good strategy right off the bat is to go to LinkedIn and look for founders. So just search for founder or CEO or even a keyword for your demographic, so SEO or marketing, and put that in LinkedIn.
I see where you're going.
Yep. And then do second connections only. So second connections on LinkedIn, as many of you are familiar with, mean that you have a first connection or a direct connection with that second connection. So the benefit of that is that you're able then to get an intro from your first connection to the second connection. Now, I've used this in the past for full-time jobs very, very successfully, asking my first connections to say, hey, I noticed this person, just wanted to check, ultra casual, if you could put me in touch. If not, no worries. And I think messages from people asking for connections can often be overly aggressive. This is a Tim Ferriss trick that he used back in the day. He would always say, hey, in my cold emails, I would put are you interested? And if not, no worries, I won't bug you again. And I think that's a really casual way to give a potential out. But you can also do that when you talk to friends of friends. So getting that mutual connection right away is a really good way to get disproportionate results and really create a winning pitch right off the bat.
To be honest, I hadn't, when you said friends of friends, I used to have this rule when I was freelancing that I would never work with friends or family. And so when you said friends of friends, I automatically, I think the hair stood up on the back of my neck, the same as probably it did for a lot of other people. But as soon as you mentioned LinkedIn, then I knew where you were going. So that whole, that second connection thing, I think that's a really solid in, right?
I think so too. And I think this is another example too, where writing a good email can shine. And you have more leeway with friends of friends or friends directly to forward the message. They'll be more forgiving of any mistakes you make versus cold email. But one thing to keep in mind, and this is something you mentioned earlier in this talk, Nathan, is that make the email all about them and make it really, really easy for them. So when I want to connect with friends of friends on LinkedIn, I'll send my first connection a message saying, hey, would it be okay for you to do this? If it's okay, I'll send you a direct message you can forward and you don't have to edit at all if you don't want. And then again, I'll give them the out that says, no worries, if not, just wanted to swing this by you. And when they see this message come in, and I'm sure you feel this way too, Nathan, it's like, oh my God, I don't have to do any work. I can just take this copy and paste thing this guy's going to send me, just forward it to my connection. They'll be connected. I don't have to even think about it. And it's a really good way to take the work out of what your friend has to do and to think about them.
Yeah, for sure. And to be honest, I don't really know of anybody now in my circle of sort of friends or colleagues or anything who would even expect me to write that anymore. Like everything just comes through, you know, here's an introduction, or here's, you know, exactly what I'm looking for. And here's, you know, just forward it through and there's the sort of the contact made. And I think another great thing about this sort of friends of friends or the introduction via LinkedIn or even an introduction via sort of real friends or colleagues, shall we say, is that it automatically creates a level of trust that could never have existed before. Any intro that comes through my mail on my inbox automatically gets more credibility than just a cold email that comes through. You know, I'm automatically more willing to talk to that person.
Amazing point. It's so true. And I think the truth is that good people want to be connected with good people. I think that's very true. And I have a group of marketing friends here in San Diego I hang out with probably about once a month. And a few of them are pretty high level, like director, manager levels. And they just are so annoyed when they can't solve a marketing problem. And they would love if I went to them and were like, hey, I have a friend who's interested in talking with you. He's an expert in marketing, wants to know how he could help out. That would solve so many of their issues. So I think you have to look at it from your perspective too, when you're reaching out to friends of friends, that I have the opportunity to solve an issue for these people. And I think that's a pretty strong mentality shift.
Where do you think the perhaps old school thinking would have come from on that? Basically just how can I make money from you?
Yeah. And this sounds kind of woo-woo, like new agey, but I think it's something that the mental shift is incredibly important. So when I go to help someone, and I try to think of this every day when I help Nusi and when I'm helping other people, it's like, how can I help them be great at what they do? And I think that's a really key mental shift that not many people are aware of. And I've had this same issue in the past where really it's about me. And I'm like, how can I not be broke? How can I make money from these people? But when I've started to shift my mentality to like, I'm going to make this really great for Nusi, for example. And yeah, we might get really good results. We might not get the best results, but I know I'll give it my all. And I know that it's going to get us closer to growing in the way we want to grow. I think it's really helped create some fun projects and move the needle a little bit in the right direction.
I think that mentality of coming from I'm broke, I need to pay the bills, always comes at that moment when you are broke and need to pay those bills. I think
yep.
And so I think it can be harder to make that sort of shift of focus to I need to get paid, to I'm going to make this next client project, you know, the best ever, and I'm going to make them so happy. I think it's a shift you need to be able to make at the right moment and probably looking forward, because I think working from the position of being broke is never a good position to be working from or planning from, perhaps. Because it's when I think we tend to be at our most desperate, shall I say.
And I think there's a big thing where it's so much easier said than done. And if me from 4 or 5 years ago were listening to me saying this now, I'd just be infuriated. So I totally understand when people are like, you know, I am broke and this is just ridiculous. Like, I can't think of anything besides being broke right now. And I think that's true. I think at some points, business is really hard, and it's really tough to switch from that scarcity mentality to the abundance mentality is very common to say nowadays. So sometimes you kind of just have to hustle through those down periods, and as much as one can, to try to shift the mentality to how can I help this client instead of how can I save myself, it's going to be hard. And I don't think it's always going to be an easy solution, and it's always going to be solved right away.
So what about to those clients that we have done really well with, I don't mean sort of financially necessarily, but that we've done a fantastic job for, there's been that sort of relationship, you know, that they've been really happy with our work. How can we think about sort of maybe building referrals for the future, shall we say?
So I think about this in a couple of ways, and then I'll give the floor to you, Nathan, because I think you're a really big expert in this field of the past referrals. For me, what I think about is I'm a strong believer in that if I do really good work, I'm just going to naturally be referred to people potentially. And I've seen this probably about 2 times in my life where it's just like I've just been working for a client. And this is when I did a lot of copywriting back in the day. And they would just be like, hey, I have someone I think you should meet. So I think the natural just inclination is how can I do really good work? Again, it goes back to that and just naturally let an introduction to someone else manifest. And at the same time, I think there's also a strong push to use those past clients who know your work, especially if you've done good work for them. And again, as Nathan said, I don't think it needs to be necessarily amazing, life-changing work. But what I think is a good approach potentially is reaching out to past clients, putting together, let's say, like a short Excel document with, here are my past clients. Here's how likely I think they are connected to other people who need help. And here's how recently I've talked to them. And using some quant-based like marketing philosophy like that, you can kind of tell who you should ask for past client referrals. So for example, if I had a client who I did amazing work for and I'm in touch with all the time, he's going to be much easier to ask for new clients than someone who I did okay work for and who I haven't talked to in a while. And within that, what I'll do is then just send them a quick email. I think it's potentially pretty enticing to offer them a discount or a free project if they put you in touch with anyone. So again, that can be a simple email like, hey, just a heads up, I'm looking for another client. I have the bandwidth to really help someone. Here's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone who needs marketing help. They run a small business. They really need landing page optimization. If you know anyone, I'd be happy to do a free project up to 10 hours for you. So that's how I think about it, but I'd be really curious to hear how you think about it too, Nathan.
Do you know what I think? And this probably sounds a little bit absurd, but the best way I've found to ensure sort of incoming leads from a sort of an extended network, shall we say, is by turning down work. And I don't mean that as quite as bluntly as it sounds. But for example, so you've completed a project for a client who's just been really happy with the results. You know, you've established a solid relationship with them, and perhaps you keep in regular contact, should we say, sorry. And what I've found is that, as you said yourself, for them it's easy just to talk about you and sort of the great job they did for you, the results they're seeing thanks to your work, etc. And once those natural sort of referrals go out and you talk to those people, one of the things we quite often overlook is being brutally honest with clients when you can or can't or shouldn't help them. And I'm kind of going off at a little bit of a tangent here, but when those word of mouth referrals do come through and you actually sit down and talk to someone, they might actually come to you with a project that falls exactly within your scope of expertise. And I've had a couple of conversations over the last year or so, even from people that I've helped in the past and friends of friends. And they've come to me with landing page design, et cetera, you know, looking basically to hire the services of someone who's going to help them grow their business. And I always try and almost put somebody off hiring me to see whether they can actually help themselves, to see whether there's actually a real need. And I think that pushback, or rather that sort of saying, well, do you know what? I'm not convinced that you need help right now. Perhaps you can do this yourself. And then you can come back a little bit further down the road for whatever reason when you have more revenue. I mean, obviously, this doesn't apply to somebody who's obviously trying to build out SEO or trying to build up traffic or whatever. The basic point of this is if you can be perfectly honest with referrals that are coming in and say, well, actually, you might be better suited to this. You might be better suited talking to someone. You might be better suited looking at fixing the hole in the bottom of this funnel before you come back and hire me. I think pushes you up the scale of the person to be trusted and a person who could therefore command a certain fee as well. I mean, that's a very long roundabout way of saying that when you're talking to the potential clients and leads, the more honest you can be and not just thinking about, oh, wow, you know, rubbing your hands, oh, I can get, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20K out of this, no problem. Just actually looking at it from their point of view, like we were saying again, like how you can help them have the most successful project possible. And maybe that means you stepping back for a while they deal with something else, but you're going to be the first person that they come back to again in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months, whatever that might be. And again, that just helps the word of mouth about you and the fact that you're willing to help essentially at a cost to yourself because you've been on the call. Wow, Nathan turned down, a 10, 20K project from me, and he told me to do this. I think that goes down a long way as well. Honesty and sincerity can be sometimes hard to find in our online marketing, sales, design, SEO-led world.
So true. And how long did it take for you to start generating those referrals from past clients? As in, how far into your career, your freelancing career, were you?
I don't think it took very long at all, really. But only because I think, again, it just comes down to the work you did, the work you provided. So you don't have to be the best designer in the world. You don't have to be the best developer in the world or online marketing specialist or SEO guru or whatever. But obviously you have to be able to provide a solid service. But I think what helps push that service to the next level is the interaction and the relationship you build with that client. You know, I've spoken to Marcus Blankenship a couple of times on past episodes, and he himself has led a large multi-million-dollar marketing agency. And he said he would take reliability and the personality of somebody as a developer over their developing skills any day of the week. So I think so much can be said just for the relationship you build. People think sometimes that, you know, I don't speak at sort of huge events, marketing events. I'm not a thought leader. Or you can still build this business for yourself. You can still build these referrals. You can still get there without being the sort of design god, the marketing god, or whatever that certain channels would have you believe online. You know. You can run a perfectly successful business without being one of these online demigods.
I think that's so true. And I think from my experience, the referrals from past clients took a long time in my freelancing career. And it might be a little different because I'm in a less demanded field, or I was when I was doing freelancing and copywriting compared to development or design. But what I would suggest for a lot of our listeners is, I think one of my favorite phrases is do things that don't scale at first. So I think everyone nowadays is just obsessed with like, how can I work smarter, not harder? How can I scale? How can I think about growing before I even grow? And I think that conversation does come along eventually, but to me that comes along nowadays much earlier than it should. So thinking about how you can just hustle and do things that don't scale and then eventually figure out a way to scale it. And in the context of trying to find past clients to refer you or trying to find new clients who you can now find, I would suggest probably starting with cold email or friends of friends and just hustling, sending a bunch of emails, optimizing your emails, experimenting with a bunch of things, really failing forward until the point where you get clients who then can refer you to other clients. And for some people like myself, that can take years. For other people, it might take months. But the hustling, I think, is highly underrated at the beginning.
Yeah, I love the expression or the phrase, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yes.
That just rings so true, I think, you know, because some people, it's easy to look at some people online and think, oh, the lucky so-and-so, you know, they have everything easy, but you can guarantee they've worked damn hard to get that lucky, you know?
It's true.
So, yeah, I think there's definitely so much to be said for just sitting down or standing up, getting out the door, whatever the case might be, and just hustling your ass off to get those leads through the door.
It's very true. And one thing I think is overlooked is most people don't start with $10,000, $20,000 retainer projects. So for me, it took about 4 or 5 years of consulting and failing in a bunch of different ways before I got my first retainer projects. And then from there, it's like, how can I continue adding value to the company? So that often takes time. And I think your point about just hustling and again, doing things that don't scale is really, really important to first grow your consultancy or your agency or your freelancing career and kind of figuring it out and failing as you go along.
I love what you said as well about failing forward. I don't think I'd ever heard that before.
Yeah. It's how I justify all the times I've messed up. I just spin it and say, no, it's okay. It's failing forward. The time I got banned from Kickstarter, it's all right. I was just failing forward.
Love it. All right, well, fantastic. Well, I think that probably wraps up today's episode. I'm sure we could go on, but finding leads is always a huge topic. And I'm sure for folks that listening out there, they have probably a couple of fantastic strategies or things that have worked for them, you know, and as always, we'd love to hear about those. If you have anything that you think we've missed out on or any stories at all that you might have with regards to finding clients, we're always keen to hear those. You know, you can contact us directly at podcast@nusi.com or just, you know, reach out via the usual channels on Facebook or on Twitter. And we'd love to hear from you. So, I mean, any parting thoughts before we skedaddle?
The only parting thoughts I have are we wrote actually a mega, mega, mega blog post on how to generate leads, which is on our blog. So if you just go to blog.nusi.com/how-to-generate-leads, you'll see a really in-depth guide on cold emailing, getting friends of friends, getting referrals from past clients, and hopefully accelerating your business to the next level.
And loads of templates on there as well that you could actually just steal from us and put straight into your email client.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And adapt, but just remember to remove the formatting.
That's right. When it says insert name, make sure you put the name.
you don't want to get caught out there. All right then, well, fantastic. Well, we'll be back the same time next week, and we hope you have a fantastic weekend. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Nathan. Thanks so much for the time.